Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on nuclear suicide when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you, for all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal." You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put these 17 words into our federal Constitution at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. And in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Well, now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach here in our business school, conducted twice a year here at the law school. And if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, if you've got a computer in front of you or you listen to us on the Internet, you can just go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the appropriate page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there in the privacy of your own home. You don't even need a plain brown wrapped package. How's that for a plan? All right, now we've been talking about nuclear suicide. Nuclear bomb war is one of 64 life-threatening problems described in the Bible. Now, if you wanted to look up in the Bible the location for these 64 life-threatening problems, you would turn to Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. Those two. Then you need to couple that with Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Then, for a little spice, we should add in Revelation chapter 6, 11, 17, and 18. Revelation chapter 6, 11, 17, and 18. Now, that's quite a bit of reading, I don't deny it. but contained in those chapters are 64 life-threatening problems guaranteed by God Almighty Himself. Guaranteed. And in spite of those 64 life-threatening problems, there will still be 10% of Earth's population left alive when the Messiah returns. 10%. Now, the population on planet Earth today is approximately 7 billion people. You know, give or take a billion. So you got about 7 billion people on the planet. Now, in Isaiah chapter 6, I believe it is, Isaiah 6, verse 13. There's one scripture that indicates the number of people that are going to be left alive on planet Earth for seed stock for the millennium, and that's 10%. Now, there's a group of people here on planet Earth. They're called the elitists, the Illuminati. There's a number of names that have been applied to these people, central bankers, you know, and so on. These people have an agenda, and believe it or not, their agenda calls for the reduction of the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. So everybody's in agreement. God, the Creator, and the Illuminati, and the major powers on planet Earth, the United States, NATO, Europe, Russia, China. Everybody wants to reduce the Earth's population by about 90%. Now, the Creator of the universe intends to do it suddenly over a short period of time. And the elitists, they want to do it over a period of about 50 years. Now, unfortunately, in this scenario, you and I live between these two extreme powers, who are in agreement that they want to reduce the Earth's population. One wants to introduce what he calls the millennium reign, or that 1,000-year millennial rule. And then the other group over here, they want to take over around the world, and they want to reduce the population to about 500 million people, which they think is about the optimum population that can be supported comfortably here on planet Earth. They're also represented by a group called the Club of Rome. Club of Rome. Now, I have covered this genocide agenda on a number of other occasions. You can pick up those programs in our archives. But one of the big, big problems that we all face is this thing of nuclear survival. Nuclear war survival skills. And there's actually a book written by that title called Nuclear War Survival Skills. And so last time I gave you the name, address, and telephone number. Well, no phone number, but the name and address here of the Nuclear War Survival Skills people and of Joel Skousen. And I suggested a way for you to finance this. Now, the three things that you need to get started on Nuclear War Survival Skills is Strategic Relocation by Joel M. Skousen, Nuclear War Survival Skills by Sesson, his name is Cresson, C-R-E-S-S-O-N, Kearney, K-E-A-R-N-Y, and a dose meter that you get at Radio Shack for $135. And I told you last time the way to finance that is to quit smoking for 90 days, and cigarettes at $2.50 a pack would buy both books and the dose meter, and that'll put you on the right track. Now, Skousen pointed out that it would cost you about $20,000 to build a fallout shelter. Now, a good fallout shelter, I had one priced here one time by David Bauer. And he told me that he'd build it for me 15 by 15 feet underground, 3 feet of dirt on top, for $15,000. All poured concrete with a concrete roof 12 inches thick. Reinforced concrete. Now, I thought that was fair to middling good price, $15,000. So I want to pass that on to you. Now, that was quite a few years ago that we did that, and so it occurs to me that the prices might have doubled, and it might cost you $30,000 to do the same thing today. Now, 15 by 15 is a pretty good size room. And you need something about that size if you've got a family of six. And that's what I thought that we would have, is probably about 6 or 8 people. Now, you also need to be able to dispose of your waste products. Now, let me describe this for you, because 8 people have to urinate 2 or 3 times a day. And they have to defecate at least once a day. At least, you know, most people do. Now, that's 8 little piles of poops from 8 people in a room 15 by 15 feet. Now, I'm going to measure this up for you. 15 times 15 is 225 square feet, or about the size of a studio apartment. I mean, this thing is not big. To give you another illustration, if you had a camper trailer that was 8 feet wide and 30 feet long, 30 times 8 is 240 square feet. It's about the size of a fifth-wheel camper trailer, and you're going to put 8 people, 6 or 8 people, in here for 2 weeks to 30 days. And all of your food has to be in there, all of your water has to be in there, and all of your poops are going to be in there, because you can't leave this thing. You can't open the door and go out for 30 days. Now, is that tough or is that tough? So, that's what you're up against. Now, fortunately, if you don't do that in advance, you could do it in an emergency with poles, with a pick and shovel in your backyard. Boy, that's going to be tough. I mean, that is really going to be tough. So the key to your success, convenience, and survivability is doing this far enough in advance so that when the event transpires, you're not up against the clock. Because if a bomb was dropped, and I gave you this in the last program, let's suppose a bomb drops over Tulsa, Oklahoma, and here I am, about 250 miles away. In about 6 hours' time, the fallout is going to be falling on me here in Isabella, Missouri, if the winds were just right. Fortunately, since I'm 250 miles away, we should be receiving less than 100 roentgens per hour. Not good, but survivable. I could survive this in my own home. Now, you can actually use your house as a fallout shelter, but you have to have a lot of duct tape, and you've got to seal every window and every door in your house, or retreat to the basement and then seal up your basement. And you have to have an air supply coming in that's filtered. You're going to have an air filter, and you can get that out of the strategic relocation book, or you can get the information. Also, you can build your own. You can make your own filter system, your own air pumping system, out of odds and ends and empty beer bottles and cracker boxes that you have around the house, if push comes to shove. But I think you'd be better served if you prepared this in advance. And the last time I said, well, we lost about half our audience on program number one, then we lost about half the balance of the audience. There's only a few of you people that are still left listening. And that's because most of the people here in the United States have, in fact, been fully persuaded that this is not survivable. So that's why I took up last time the survivability myths and facts. The truth of the matter is, there were thousands of survivors that survived the blast, the fallout, and the repercussions of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And you can do the same thing today. And there are people out here, and this guy Kearney and Joel Skousen are two of them, that have taken a look at this and said, yeah, this is survivable. Tough, tain't easy, but it's survivable. And hell, a lot of you people won't make any preparations whatsoever, and you're going to survive it. But if you don't make any preparations at all, now looking here at Isabella, Missouri, we happen to live in a non-fallout zone. If the winds are normal, we won't get any fallout here at all, period. For you people living on the west coast of California, that is Northern California, from, say, Santa Rosa North, and west of Portland on a strip down the Oregon coast and up the Washington coast, from Puget Sound down to the mouth of the Columbia River, you probably won't get any fallout at all, period. None. Now, for everybody else in America, you're vulnerable. There are a lot of little spots that won't receive any fallout. And if you're in those spots, and you're lucky, that's just, you know, breaks of the game. But you probably don't want to bet on that, because right here where I live, if the winds aren't blowing just like they normally do, we could get fallout here, which is why I need a fallout shelter. Now, I said in the last program, if you've got lots of money and you've got the wherewithal to do it, you might want to prepare a fallout shelter, an underground bunker, for 50, 100, 200, or 1,000 people. You know, but I didn't do that because I just have 6 people in my family that I'm preparing for, and God love all the rest of you. I hope you've got a place too. But I got to tell you, I don't have room for 12, 20, 30, 50, or 100 people. And it's for that reason that I don't want to advertise or tell you where my fallout shelter is. Because when I retreat to it, I'm gonna pull it in around me like a turtle in his shell, and I ain't coming out for a month. And then when I come out, I don't know what I'm going to see or what I'm going to find, but I hope to be one of those that's still alive and breathing at the end of the 30 days or 2 weeks. So I needed a dose meter. A fallout dose meter. You get those at Radio Shack, or used to. I guess you still can. If not, you'll have to find a place and order it. Then I'm sure that Joel Skousen can probably tell you where to get it. And then that's the first day of the rest of your life. Now, I'm going to give you a couple, three more of these myths. I'm not going to tell you everything. It's a 300-page book, and I can't cover it all. But I want to tell you that it's survivable. There are going to be survivors. God Almighty Himself says there's going to be survivors. And hey, you might have an inside track with Jesus, and they're going to rapture you away, and you don't need to prepare for any of this. But I went ahead and prepared anyway, because I don't know whether I'm going to be raptured away or not. I plan on not being raptured. So I plan on facing the Great Tribulation all of and by myself right here on planet Earth. Now, for those of you that are in the rapture movement, then, you know, I'm not here to persuade you to do one thing or another. I'm just here to tell you this is where it's coming. We are now in the window. The window is 2009 to 2015, when Russia is going to reach the zenith of their military power, and we are going to reach the depths of our military power. And when those two events coincide, I think that will be the most opportune time for the Russians to strike. Most opportune time. So, yeah, I think we can all make up our minds to it. Now, if you don't want to make up your mind to it, I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right and you're wrong. I couldn't care less. I am only concerned about me and my family. I'm not concerned about you and your family at all. And if you die in this, it'll be a tragedy, and I'll be sad for you. And I'll see you in the resurrection, and I hope, wish you the best. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, I'm going to try my best to survive. I'm one of those kinds, a survivor kind, and I want to see if I can live through this. I'm going to give it my best shot. Here's myth number two. The fallout radiation penetrates everything, and there's no escaping its deadly effects. Most of you people probably have been told that, and you might even believe it. That's not true. It does not penetrate everything. And you can reduce the level of the penetration of what does come in to a tolerable level. Here are the facts. Some gamma radiation from fallout will penetrate the shielding materials of even an excellent shelter and reach its occupants. However, the radiation dose that the occupants of an excellent shelter will receive while inside this shelter can be reduced to a dose smaller than the average American receives during his lifetime from X-rays and other radiation exposures that are normal in American society today. The design features of such a shelter include the use of a sufficient thickness of earth or other heavy shielding material. Gamma rays are like X-rays, but more penetrating. Figure 1.3 shows how rapid gamma rays are reduced in number, but not in their ability to penetrate, by layers of packed earth. Each of the layers shown is one having thickness of packed earth, about 3.6 inches, 9 centimeters. A halving thickness is the thickness of a material which reduces by half the dose of radiation that passes through it. So they're recommending 3 feet of dirt on top of 12 inches of reinforced concrete. And if you do that, you can reduce the gamma radiation effect to that of about a lifetime of X-rays that you normally receive by going to the dentist or the doctor. Got that? Now, you can also do this by digging a slit trench, covering it with railroad ties or poles, and then covering it over with 3 feet of dirt. You can do the same thing. That's a lot of work. It would probably be better if you could get a backhoe in and then build a shelter with concrete and make provision in the shelter for your waste materials. Now, let me tell you, you're going to have quite a bit of waste. All of the food that you put in there is going to go through these 6 or 8 human beings, and they're going to come out their other end and go into buckets that are going to have to be stored or disposed of. So if you go this route and you want to build a shelter underground, make sure that you've got in mind a modality for disposing of your waste. You got to have food, clothing, and shelter for up to 30 days. 30 days. And what if they had several nuclear strikes and you had to stay in there for 60 days? See what I mean? You know, you need to be prepared for Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C. This is what we do here at the law school. We suggest that Plan A, that's good, should devolve into a Plan B, and that's better. But just in case Plan A and Plan B go awry and don't work, you should have a Plan C. Now, we haven't planned for Plan D, E, and F, because if you can't make it by the time you get past Plan A, Plan B, and into Plan C, you probably are going to die. Probably. If Plan C doesn't work, you probably could just pack it in. Now, I'm going to go over here to another one. Listen to this. Myth. A heavy nuclear attack would set practically everything on fire, causing firestorms in cities that would exhaust the oxygen supply in the air, and all shelter occupancy would be killed by the intense heat or suffocated by the lack of oxygen. All right. Now, that's a fear. And in some locations, that probably will come to pass. You know, if you're close to the fireball, close to the detonation, that could happen to you. Which is why Joel Skousen really shines. He said, if you would leave San Diego before the bomb drops, then you won't have to worry about that San Diego bomb. So I did that. I got out of San Diego. I'm as far away from San Diego as I think I can safely get. So I'm not concerned about that fireball and that bomb. Now, you people that are living, you know, in Tijuana, you got a problem. No doubt about it. You people that are living there in that San Diego area, you got a problem. You can survive the blast. You can survive the fallout. And you can do it close to ground zero. Listen to this. On a clear day, thermal pulses, that is heat radiation that travels at the speed of light, from an air burst can set fire to easily ignitable materials such as window curtains, upholstery, dry newspaper, and dry grass over about as large an area as is damaged by the blast. And it can cause second-degree skin burns to exposed people who are as far away as 10 miles from a 1 megaton explosion. Now, 1 megaton, let's talk about the sizes of these blasts. 1 megaton is about 1 million tons of TNT detonated all at the same time. Now, there are some 10, 20, and 100 megaton nuclear devices. What they discovered is that a 1 megaton weapon is just as effective as a 100 megaton bomb. It isn't as big a blast, but it's just as effective, because the bigger the blast doesn't mean the bigger the area that it covers. So a 1 megaton bomb will kill everybody up to 10 miles. It's burn your skin. A blast 100 times that size does the same trick, but maybe for 20 miles instead of 10. But for practical purposes, these super bombs are inefficient. You can get 100 times more effect by dropping 2 1-megaton bombs than you can by dropping 1 100-megaton bombs. So on all of the submarines and all of the missiles that are out there, they're using 1-megaton warheads. Just one. It's plenty effective. 1 1-megaton blast over San Diego is going to terminate that place. Just 100 would be a bigger bomb, bigger blast, bigger hole in the ground, but ain't going to do a hell of a lot more damage than the 1. So plan on a 1-megaton blast. Not to say that they won't drop a 100 here and there, but it's not very likely. Everybody has tested these bombs now for 50 years, and they come to that conclusion. Now, the firestorm could occur only when the concentration of combustible structures is very high, as in the case of very dense centers of a few old American cities. At rural and suburban building densities, most people in earth-covered fallout shelters would have nothing to fear from a firestorm. Now, again, you know, if you're living in an old town, you know, like Chicago, and they drop it on the loop, and you got a lot of buildings that maybe are wood, yeah, you might have some firestorm there. But again, if you follow the Skousen Strategic Relocation Program and just get out, you know, he's got 150 cities here that he's identified. You need to get out. Leave them. Like Omaha, Nebraska. So I mentioned to you, I said, you know, instead of living on the east side of Omaha, why don't you live on the west side? Huh? 25 miles west of Omaha would save you, you know, a lot of grief. So the firestorm myth, you know, is just that. In the worst hit parts of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where all of the buildings were in fact demolished, everyone was killed by blast, radiation, or fire. That's a myth. That didn't happen that way. You probably believe that downtown Hiroshima, all of the buildings were demolished, everyone was killed by the blast, radiation, and fire. The fact is, in Nagasaki, some people survived uninjured who were far inside tunnel shelters built for conventional air raids and located as close as one-third of a mile from ground zero, which was the point directly below the explosion. This was true even though these long, large shelters lacked blast doors and were deep inside the zone within which all buildings were destroyed. People far inside long, large, open shelters are better protected than are those inside small, open shelters. All right, so now let me picture this for you. Remember the pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? And all that's left is a few steel and concrete reinforced building skeletons. Everything else is gone. Just the grid where the streets were. All right? Underneath that devastation, one-third of a mile away, so let's figure this out, 5,280 divided by 3 is 1,760 feet. There were people located underground in long, open tunnels, 1,760 feet from ground zero, who survived. How's that? Now, most people in these open, that close to the blast, in open fallout shelters are going to die because of what's known as the blast pressure. It's going to raise the atmospheric pressure from 14 pounds per square inch to 100 pounds per square inch, or 50 pounds per square inch, or something like that. And that blast overpressure is going to kill you. That's true. But if you have a blast door on your fallout shelter, now I don't know, the Nagasaki bomb and Hiroshima bombs, they were not one megaton. But a one megaton bomb dropped on the White House, they expect 140 feet underground behind blast doors that the president can survive it. Now, let me repeat that. A one megaton bomb exploded over the White House with the president 140 feet underground behind blast doors is expected to survive it. Now, that's what they're planning for, and that's what the president is banking on. So I'm sitting here saying, well, hell, if the president of the United States can go down 14 stories in the earth, now that's a long way, it's 140 feet, straight down. And then they shut that off with a blast door. And then they put the president in a train. They're going to wisp him off to Camp David. And they've got underground bunkers ready for the president and his family and many other families and the presidential cabinet and joint chiefs of staff and Congress, all their families. I mean, we're talking about thousands and thousands of people are being prepared for in these underground shelters for up to 4 years. Now, by God, if the president and the Congress and the Supreme Court and the Pentagon can survive this, then I figure little Georgie Gordon can survive it. Now, they're not going to pay for my shelter. I got after I've paid for the president's shelter and a Kit Bond's shelter and God knows how many others, I still have to build my own and pay for my own. But at least I was warned in advance and told. And I saw these myths and these facts. And I said to myself, hell, I think I can do this. Now, if I can do it, I'm pretty well persuaded that you can too. Which is another good reason for putting on this story. Now, it's a halfway point here, so let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and you can download this 4-hour introductory CD package off of our website. It is now up and on our website. You can take it directly from there. Or if you're listening to us on radio in downtown Seoul, Korea, and you don't have a computer, then you can write to us or call us and we'll send it to you. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. We should keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, these beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, those are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about nuclear war survival skills. I'm going to give you the name and number of that book again. It's published by an outfit called the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine in Cave Junction, Oregon. So if you went online and you looked for the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine, you'd probably find it. It was originally published by the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, a facility of the U.S. Department of Energy, in 1979. You might get it from the U.S. Government Printing Office. But there are also two numbers that you might get. You could go to Barnes & Noble and tell them, I'm looking for a book called Nuclear War Survival Skills by Cresson H. Kearney. His name is spelled C-R-E-S-S-O-N. Odd name. C-R-E-S-S-O-N, Cresson H. Kearney, K-E-A-R-N-Y. That would probably do it, especially if you told them that it was published by this Cave Junction outfit, you know, the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine. You give them those three clues, those Barnes and Noble guys, God, they're good. All right, now, just in case that still isn't enough, there is an ISBN number. ISBN number. Write this down. It's 0-94-24-87-01-X. That ought to do it for you. But if that doesn't do it for you, here's the Library of Congress catalog number. And that is 87-60790. All right, now let's do this one for you again. Got your pen and paper out here now. Get this down. ISBN number is 0-94-24-87-01-X. And the Library of Congress catalog number is 87-60790. About a 300-page book, 282 pages, 8.5 by 11. Diagrams, pictures. Now, I'm looking here at a picture on page 15. Let me describe it for you. It's a picture of an undamaged, earth-covered family shelter in Nagasaki. So here's in all this debris. Remember out here in the picture, and all they've got is the grid. Everything is just total devastation. Just the street grid is left. All right. Listen to this story. Many earth-covered family shelters were essentially undamaged in areas where blast and fire destroyed all of the buildings. Figure 1.5 shows a typical earth-covered backyard family shelter with a crude wooden frame. This shelter was essentially undamaged, although it was less than 100 yards, 300 feet, from ground zero at Nagasaki. The calculated maximum overpressure, that is, the pressure above the normal air pressure, was about 65 pounds per square inch. Anyone inside so small a shelter without a blast door would have been killed by the blast pressure at this distance from the explosion. However, in a recent test blast, an earth-covered shelter, Expedient small pole shelter equipped with blast doors, was totally undamaged at 53 psi. The pressure rise inside was slight, not even enough to have damaged the occupants' eardrums. And if the poles are available, field tests have indicated that many families can build such shelters in just a few days. All right, now let me describe this shelter, because they've got sketches and drawings here. What you do is you dig a trench. Now, the wider you build this trench, then the more square feet you have inside of it. So if you were to dig a trench 10 feet wide, 8 feet deep, and then cover it with poles, like utility power poles, and then cover that with the dirt that you've dug out of this trench. Now, this trench might be 30 feet long, 10 feet wide. It might be 30 feet long, 7 feet wide, 6 feet wide. But remember that the narrower this thing is, 3 feet is a hallway. 3 feet is a hallway. 6 feet is 2 hallways wide. 10 feet is about the width of a very narrow bedroom. So 10 feet wide. Now build it 30 feet long and you'll have 8 feet deep with your poles over the top. This is called a pole shelter. Now you could build this with railroad ties. Now railroad ties, remember, are 8 feet long. They're 100 inches long, 8 feet, 4 inches. And if you were to build this thing 7 feet wide, which would be just, on the edge here, 6 feet wide is a narrow trench, which would give you a foot on each side to put your railroad ties on. They would do that also. This is called a slit trench. Now take the amount of time that it would take 6 people to dig this trench, put these railroad ties on top of it, and then wheelbarrow the dirt back on top of these railroad ties, 3 feet deep. You could build this yourself in your own backyard. Now you need a door on here, a blast door. Now, that's assuming that you're living close to the blast area. Remember, if you're not living in San Diego, you don't need to worry about this, but if you're going to be in close proximity to the detonation point of the bomb, you must have a blast door. You may not have any fallout in your shelter, but you'll all be dead from the overpressure. Now, again, nobody in his right mind ought to stay in San Diego, but then again, some of you people have got to do it. So if you've got a basement and if you've got blast doors, these have to be steel doors in a steel frame. You can buy these steel doors in a steel frame at your local Lowe's or, Home Depot. Install that door on your shelter and you can probably survive the blast. Now get this. As close as 1,800 feet from ground zero. Depending upon the size nuclear weapon that's being used. Now, these are extremes, but the President of the United States, they got a shaft, goes right out of the White House, right straight down 140 feet. And then they got a tunnel with a train, and it's going to take him to Camp David. Or to some other undisclosed, unknown underground retreat. Now, there's a number of these retreats. See, the president might get caught in the nuclear blast. He might be up in Air Force One, you know, when this happens. So then he's got a place to go. They'll land the airplane, and they'll whisk him away and put him in an underground shelter some other location. Could be Cheyenne Mountain out in Colorado. Could be Camp David. Could be some other location in some other state. We don't even know where all of these locations are. And it's logical. I mean, hell, you know, government isn't going to come out here and tell you right where the president's and the Congress's locations are located. But we do know they've already been built. They're already in place. We know some of the locations. They're pretty common locations. The White House and the Capitol building are two of them. They actually believe that the members of Congress can go into the underground shelter under the Capitol building and survive a direct blast. They've designed it that way. You just need to be far enough underground to do it and far enough away from the blast. Now, that's brinksmanship, but, you know, hey, if they can do it, you and I can do it. Now, Joel Skousen, let me give you his name and number again. I like to do that with every program. And keep in mind, these people are not paying me now. If you think, hey, well, Gordon, he's getting a kickback off these books and book sales. No, I don't even sell books. There's no money in it, number one. It takes a lot of time, effort, and energy. And I'm an old man, and I'm lazy. I'm so damn lazy, I got hair growing on the palms of my hands. So you know I'm not going to be out here doing much work. Now, that being the case, then, there's a guy here that's writing the book. His name is Joel Skousen. And his phone number is 801-224-4746. I just get on the horn, call the guy, and say, hey, Joel, I heard about you. If you'd like to get a copy of your book, that's 801-224-4746. Now, this guy is also located at the end of an email address. And that's joelskousen.com, J-O-E-L-S, at joelskousen.com. Can you remember that one once more? J-O-E-L-S, at, remember that at sign? Then J-O-E-L-S-K-O-U-S-E-N, joelskousen.com. Now, he's also located at 290 West, 580 South, Orem, Utah, 84058. For those of you that don't have telephones or emails, then you need to write a letter because you're sitting in Uganda or maybe, South Africa or Botswana land or something like that, and you're listening to us over the radio, and you don't have a telephone and you don't have email service. Well, okay, write him a letter. The number is 290 West, 580 South, Orem, O-R-E-M, Utah, U-T-A-H, 84058. Now, I know that for anybody out there in the world, you're going to say, what do you mean, 290 West, 580 South? Make up your mind. I'm not giving you this off the top of my head, and I haven't made a mistake. The Mormons actually have a code that they use for addresses. And then they go north, south, east, and west. And I know this sounds contradictory and it sounds insane to any normal person. But if you don't address it this way, he can't get it. And if you do address it this way, you can rest assured that there's a Mormon postman out there that can deliver your letter. They can do it. There's nobody else can, but they can. So you write down 290 West, 580 South, in Orem, Utah. Very simple name, O-R-E-M, Orem, Utah, 84058. That's for all you people out there in Uganda, Botswana land, and so on. And you're looking for the book, Strategic Relocation. Now, for most of you people in the world, you don't need to strategically relocate. Nobody's going to be dropping a bomb on you sitting out there in Botswana land. But hey, there might be a bomb dropped in close proximity on a U.S. airbase somewhere in your country, and it may affect you. So you should be aware of that, because we've got bases now around the world in 730 locations in 130 different countries. So in 130 countries around the world, you may get a Russian nuclear weapon dropped on your home or a home near you because of us. All right, so now let me give you another myth or two here. It says here, because some modern H-bombs are over 1,000 times as powerful as the A-bomb that destroyed most of Hiroshima. These H-bombs are 1,000 times as deadly and 1,000 times as destructive. That's a myth. I told you that a minute ago, but here's the fact. A nuclear weapon that is 1,000 times as powerful as the one that blasted Hiroshima, if exploded under comparable circumstances and conditions, produces equally serious blast damage to wood frame houses over an area up to about 130 times as large, but not 1,000 times as large. For example, airbursting a 20 kiloton weapon at the optimum height, 1,600 feet, to destroy most buildings will destroy or severely damage houses out to about 1.5 miles from ground zero. The circular area of at least severe blast damage will be about 6 1/3 square miles. The explosion of a 20 kiloton weapon releases the same amount of energy as 20,000 tons of TNT. 1,020 kiloton weapons airbursted all at the same time, well separated to avoid overlap of their blast areas, would destroy or severely damage houses over areas totaling 6,330 square miles. In contrast, similar airbursting of one 20 megaton weapon, equivalent in explosive power to 20 million tons of TNT, would destroy or severely damage the great majority of houses out to a distance of 16 miles from ground zero. The area of destruction would be about 800 square miles, not 6,330 square miles. Today, few, if any, of Russia's huge intercontinental ballistic missiles are armed with 20 megaton warheads. Now, a huge Russian ICBM typically carries 10 warheads of 1 megaton each, with each warhead pre-programmed to hit a separate target. All right, so when the Russians strike, they're going to launch one missile from a submarine, which will contain 10 1 megaton weapons, which will individually target 10 different nuclear silos in North Dakota or Montana. Now, 16 square miles, that's a big piece of real estate. Big piece of real estate. The county that I live in, Ozark County, is 800 square miles. If they dropped a 20 megaton weapon right here on Isabella, Missouri, it would devastate, destroy, burn up, waste 800 square miles right here in Ozark County. That just defies imagination. Hell, it takes an hour to drive across the county. I mean, if you're going to drive from here out to, say, Amix's restaurant, which is up on the line with Douglas County, it takes about an hour to drive from the farm on one side of the county up to Amix's on the other side. And everything in between is going to be destroyed. God, that just defies description. Okay. But it isn't going to do anything to the people in Springfield who live 87 miles away. Well, you know, save for the fallout, the blast isn't going to affect those people in Springfield at all. and they're 87 miles away, 165,000 of them. Now listen, when you're close to the blast, that's bad news. So if you relocate away from the blast zone, now all you have to worry about is the fallout. Now the people out in Springfield might be concerned about the fallout, but if they've got fallout shelters and they're prepared to hole up in them for 30 days, once they see the flash, they get into the shelter, they'll all survive it. So a Russian nuclear attack on the United States would completely destroy all American cities. That's a myth. That's a myth. As long as the Soviet leaders are rational, they will continue to give first priority to knocking out our weapons and other military assets. Assets that could damage Russia and kill the Russians. To explode enough nuclear weapons of any size to completely destroy American cities would be an irrational waste of warheads. The Soviets can make much better use of most of the warheads that would be required to completely destroy American cities. The majority of those warheads probably already are targeted to knock out our retaliatory missiles by being surface burst or near surface burst on their hardened silos, located far from most cities and densely populated areas. So as long as the Russians are acting rationally, and these people aren't stupid, I mean, they want to take over the world and run it. And in order to do that, there's got to be some people left in the world to run. So they're going to target the military facilities. So if you're in the Army or the military and you're living on one of these military sites, such as off at Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska, for you people, just put your head between your knees and kiss your ass goodbye. For the average Joe Sixpack soldier on the base, it's all over for you. Rest assured. Now, for the rest of us out here, see, there's some other people out here. There are going to be some survivors. And the trick to all of this is, can you be one of those survivors? That's all. Just that simple. Now, the military is going to do everything they can to save every soldier possible. They'll need you. They'll need you. But, you know, military families live in above-ground housing on the air base. Now, what chance do those people have? Now, the soldiers themselves may be on the base down in hardened silos. You can rest assured that if we get a clue that there is an invasion coming, they're going to take all the military personnel on the base and put them underground. But that doesn't do much for your wives and your children and mom and dad and everybody else living in downtown Omaha. No, does it? All right. So if that's the case, then you need to be making preparations for those people, and that's the purpose for this series of programs. Hey, guys, can we make provisions for ourselves? We have already made provision for all of the elites, all of the Illuminati, all of the president and the president's men, and the Congress of the United States and the military personnel. They're all taken care of. You don't need to worry about them anymore. They're all right. Now there's you and me, mom and dad, brothers and sisters, and your immediate family, your children. Can you save any of those people? And the answer is yes, you can. Now, I've got to wrap it up right about here because we're out of time. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.